her as slow as could be and placed a hand on her hip. She was mesmerized by his gentle approach and the touch of his hand as he brushed her hair over her shoulder, holding her gaze so intensely she couldn't speak. His hand slid softly to the nape of her neck, then into her hair, until his long fingers cradled the back of her head. His other arm circled her waist, holding her against him.
"Forgotten how?" she whispered.
He gave her plenty of time to pull away, to tell him no, but her voice was silenced by the throbbing of her heart, the wanting in her head. As he lowered his face toward hers, she went up on her toes, bracing for a fierce, possessive kiss. But his mouth came gently down over hers, drawing a breathy sigh. His lips were warm and soft, his hands hard and hot, and her body was a vibrating mess. His beard scratched her cheeks, sending swirls of desire spiraling through her core. He pressed her tighter against him, angled her head, and kissed her harder. His tongue swept across the seam of her lips, and she surrendered to his masterful seduction. His whole body beat against her like a pulse, bringing a surge of lust from some forgotten place inside her. He took the kiss deeper, tasting every dip and swell of her mouth, and a heady sound rumbled in the back of his throat. And oh, how she loved that! She'd never been kissed so thoroughly, been wanted so desperately. She never imagined that the man who was forward motion personified could harness that power and deliver it with such all-consuming passion. She couldn't resist lifting higher on her toes, clawing at his shoulder, trying to taste more of his sweet and sinful desire. He was right there with her, gripping her waist as he lifted her off her feet, holding her against his hard frame, her legs dangling off the ground as he kissed her breathless. She was so lost in the slide of their tongues, the purely male, utterly unique taste of him. Time failed to exist. They could have been kissing for hours, maybe even days. By the time her feet touched the ground, her noodle legs refused to work. But they didn't need to. Bullet was still holding her tight, kissing her softer now, his scratchy beard trailing after his lips across her jaw, all the way to her ear. His warm breath seeped into her skin as he whispered, "I think you remember how to kiss just fine. Go out with me, Lollipop. You don't have to be a biker girl. Just be my girl."
"Kay,"
came out embarrassingly breathy.
"Fuck yeah, Lollipop," he said louder.
She was reeling from his exclamation when his mouth came down roughly over hers, with all the fierceness and fervor she'd braced herself for earlier. Gone were the slow, sensual kisses he'd lavished on her, replaced with an aggressive, celebratory rush of excitement, which she felt from her head all the way down to her toes and every tingly inch in between. Did they really have to finish working? Did they have to move from this very spot, ever? Couldn't she stay in his arms, being kissed into the heavens forevermore? She'd never known a kiss could be so intense and electric, and smooth and entrancing at the same time. Even her fantasies couldn't come close to measuring up to the graceless power of his kisses. When they finally came up for air, she was a boneless, needy mess. How was she supposed to speak after that kiss? She was still clutching his shirt. She couldn't recall grabbing it in the first place, and for some reason she couldn't unfurl her fingers. Nervous laughter fell from her lips. Good Lord, he'd kissed her silly. She touched her forehead to the juncture of his ribcage. His big hands pressed against her cheeks, and he tilted her face up toward his, which only made her laugh more.
"I'm sorry," she managed. "That was a pretty amazing kiss. How am I going to work, to function after that?"
If he could make her lose her mind with kisses, what would happen when he touched her, when she touched him? Oh, Lord, how she wanted to find out. "Work can wait." His eyes were coal black, and his voice was thick with desire, snapping her out of her fantasy. She lowered her gaze, concentrating on the hole in his shirt instead of the look in his eyes, reminding herself that she wasn't one of those girls who lost her head over men. But she couldn't resist stealing another glance at him, and his lips curled up in a wicked smile, causing lust to coil tight and hot, low in her belly. Okay, maybe I am one of those girls who loses her head over bullets. Was that so bad? No, she decided. It wasn't bad. It was very, very good.
We good? Play now, work later?
He said it with a tease in his voice, and she was glad for it, because her normal sure-of-herself goody-two-shoes personality seemed to have fled the premises, leaving a lusty, horny, want-to-be-bad woman behind. Yes, we're good. But no, we're not going to play. You're taking me on a proper date tonight, remember? Despite losing my head for a few minutes, I'm not the kind of girl to kiss and then jump into bed. Besides, Dixie's going to be here soon to go over the renovation plans. And I have some things I want to show you, too. His gaze ignited, and she swatted his arm. Not like that. Gosh, Bullet, a few hot kisses, and you think that's a green light and you can take home the prize?
I happen to like green lights and prizes.
Why did she find everything he said exciting now, instead of inappropriate? Because now I know how fun inappropriate can be. Calm down, Brutus. We've got work to do. She took a step toward the stool and turned back, seeing him through new eyes. Less judgmental, kinder eyes. She went up on her toes, hands pressed to his hard pecs, and kissed the tattooed snake on his neck, which was as high as she could reach. Without a word, she climbed up on the stool, strangely calm and focused for the first time in days. Finley leaned over a mass of documents as she explained to Dixie the technical differences between several appliances she deemed the best for your money. She seemed to have a mental checklist she was ticking off with each point she made, and went on to explain why it was worth an extra few $1,000 to opt for a 12-burner stove rather than the 8-burner options. Though he was busy doing inventory, Bullet got caught up in her enthusiasm and the passion in her voice over something as boring as kitchen appliances. The more she explained, the clearer it became that she really cared about the future of their family's bar. Based on the customer suggestions, she said to Dixie, they really do want mostly finger foods like sandwiches, fries, wings, you know, standard pub fare. But there were enough requests for other more complicated dishes that I think you should renovate for the future of what whiskies could easily become. That makes sense, but how far out of our budget is it? Dixie asked. Finley pushed a spreadsheet in front of Dixie. It's really not bad. Dixie studied the numbers. Less than $7,000? That hardly seems enough to worry about. Exactly, Finley said. And with the increased profit from the kitchen, you should make it up fairly quickly. I'm glad you agreed to hire 2 cooks and 2 dishwashers, even if part-time, in case someone gets sick. I have some other ideas, too. I think once we make a few decorative changes, you could pull in a whole new crowd.
Bullet's enthusiasm came to a screeching halt. Decorative changes?
Just a few small things, Finley explained. Like clearing the black from the windows and maybe spiffing things up out front so it doesn't look like such a dive from the road. Curb appeal goes a long way, and with a little love...
Hold up, sweet thing. We aren't looking for a new crowd. Whiskey's is a biker bar. It's been a biker bar for several generations, and that's what it's going to stay. I thought Dixie covered all this with you.
I did. Don't you have inventory to do? Finley and I are capable of dealing with this on our own. Dixie glared at him. It's okay, Dixie, she said. Yes, Dixie went over it with me. But don't you want it to be the type of establishment that people are drawn to, that new bikers in the area want to check out? Not really, Dixie said. That can be tricky around here. What do you mean?
Bullet came around the bar and said, The first problem with your idea is that Whiskey's isn't an establishment. It's a bar, a dive, a place guys can come to after a hard day's work and shoot the shit, have a few drinks, play a few rounds of pool, hook up with a hot chick. We're not looking to be some fancy place like Whispers. And as far as new bikers go, babe, you've got to learn about our world before you can make those suggestions.
You know what? You're absolutely right, Finley said enthusiastically. She picked up a pen and started jotting down notes. I'm going to check out other biker bars here and in the neighboring towns. That will tell me what your competition is, and I'll take a look at their menus, too. Bullet put his hand over hers, stopping her from writing any more nonsense.
Like hell you will.
Dixie glared at him. Finley wrenched her hand free.
What is wrong with you? First of all, I'll do whatever I think is right, and second of all, market research is important.
Putting your pretty little ass in danger is stupid. We've got all the market research we need right here in the history of the bar. I don't give a flying fuck what other bars are doing. I only care about ours, and it's not changing.
Finley gasped, shock rising in her wide eyes.
Just because I agreed to go out with you does not give you the right to demean me and call me stupid. In fact, it makes me wonder what the heck I was thinking.
She pushed to her feet, the shock in her eyes morphing to hurt, slicing right through his heart.
You agreed to go out with Bullet? Dixie asked.
Finley looked at him with disdain.
Yes, but now I think it might have been a mistake.
Bullet's gut clenched. Like hell it was.
He pulled her closer and sank down to a stool, bringing her between his legs so they were eye to eye. He finally realized what his mother had meant when she'd said, "Don't go after your sweetheart with your brawn, baby. Go after her with your heart." The last thing he wanted was to hurt Finley, and he'd just done that. He didn't have much experience with apologies. In fact, he avoided them at all costs, living his life how he wanted to, without anyone telling him what to do or how to feel. Now, faced with the pain he'd caused Finley, he not only wanted to apologize, but he needed to. The nightmares from his military days wouldn't come close to the haunting her sad eyes would inflict on him.
"Oh, my God," Dixie whispered. "Penny was right."
He had no idea what the hell Penny had to do with this, but he wasn't about to slow down enough to find out. He regretted hurting Finley's feelings, even if he stood behind his statement.
"I'm sorry, Finley. I wasn't calling you stupid. I meant the idea of a sweetheart like you going into biker bars wasn't smart, because you have no idea of the danger you'd be putting yourself in."
"Well, you need to think before you speak."
Her gaze softened slightly, but the hurt remained palpable.
"You can say that again," Dixie mumbled, and this time Bullet glared at her. "I'm not very good at that," he admitted. "But I can try to be more careful about the way I say things."
That seemed to soothe a little of the hurt, but he'd damn well try to be more careful.
"Thank you," she said, with more politeness than he deserved. "I think I proved that I can handle myself around bikers."
Grinding his teeth against a knee-jerk reaction of, "Bullshit, you have no fucking clue," he said,
"Babe, you proved that you could handle yourself around my type of bikers in my bar, where they know I'll pound the life out of them if they wrong anyone in my circle. Bikers are not all the same."
"But aren't most of those guys in your gang?" she asked. "They weren't aggressive with me."
She tucked her hair behind her ear, looking so sweet he wanted to put her in protective armor and stand sentinel over her, keeping all the ugliness away. The fact that he had spouted off something so hurtful without even a hint that he was saying something wrong did not escape him. He was part of that ugliness, and he knew he'd have to figure shit out or let her go, because causing the pain he'd seen in her eyes again was not an option. "The Dark Knights is not a gang, Finley. We're a motorcycle club, which means we're a group of people who have an interest in biker culture. We have rides and events that are family-friendly, and in our case help the community. Gangs are completely different beasts. There's a lot of drugs and violence, parties that, trust me, you do not want to know about or be part of the shit that goes down there. The last thing we want is for some gang to ride through town and think they're welcome in our bar." Her expression was taut, her eyes contemplative.
"But how can anyone possibly tell the difference? You guys all look the same."
"But they're not," Dixie said.
He'd heard it his whole life. "You guys all look the same."
Growing up in the club environment, he'd had the same observation and questions when he was young. There were plenty of times when his family was out and his father, who went by the road name Biggs because of his 6'5 stature and whom Bullet took after, would see a rough rider and suddenly send Bullet and his siblings off to the car with their mother or into a store. or there would be a knock at the door in the middle of the night, and one of the club members would show up, bloody and angry, and his father would take off for hours. He learned about loyalty, and as he got older and stupider, he'd made his own mistakes, causing trouble to come crashing down on his family. Getting into the military was his savior and his demise. His stomach knotted up with the memories. Those weren't things Finley needed to hear about, but she had to understand that biker's turf wasn't something she should fuck with. "You know the leather vest I wear?" Bullet asked. "The patch on the back represents the Dark Knights. Every club and gang has patches that represent their club and members' statuses in the club." Finley drew in a deep breath and blew it out slowly. "So what? You have them all memorized or something?" "Pretty much," Dixie said. "Listen, Finley," Bullet said carefully. "I admire you for wanting to do right by our family's bar, but there are reasons Whiskey's is the way it is." Her lips thinned with displeasure, and he knew he wasn't going to get off without a clearer explanation. "Do you know why the bar is on the edge of town? Why Peaceful Harbor isn't overrun with gangs and all the bullshit that goes on in other towns?"
"I can't even imagine Peaceful Harbor with gangs."
Finley's gaze moved between him and Dixie.
"I get it. You don't want me to change the bar. But I still think it's a mistake. You're asking me to make the bar better, but no one will know it is except your current customers."
"Finley, look at me." He waited until he had her full attention. "I didn't want this expansion in the first place, but I understand why everyone else did and why we need to bring in more income and change things up a little. I'm on board with that. But there are things that cannot change. Once you understand the history, you'll realize I'm not just being a dick." She winced.
"I hate that word."
"Yeah, well, you probably hate half my vocabulary, and that's not going to change either. This is who I am, Finley. I curse and I protect my family and this town at all costs, period."
Her gaze darted to Dixie, who nodded. "It's the Dark Knight's way. And cursing, that's Bullet's way. He's honest, Finn. I don't think he knows how to be any other way."
Bullet was warmed by his sister's words. "There's never a reason to lie. We were brought up to be straight shooters, and I'm not about to try to pretend I'm something I'm not. I'm a Whiskey, and I'm proud to be a Whiskey. Our great-grandfather founded this bar and the Dark Knights, and he protected this town. Whiskey's was built on the edge of town because that's where you stop trouble from coming in. Once bad news comes over the bridge into Peaceful Harbor, it's got only one way to go, forward, and all sorts of hell can break loose until it finds its way back out of town, if it finds its way out."
"I know this probably sounds far-fetched to you, Finn," Dixie said, "but Peaceful Harbor is peaceful because the riffraff has been kept out."
"Our ancestors and the Dark Knight's Brotherhood spent years claiming this town, defining our territory," Bullet explained, "and every generation of the Dark Knights since has protected it, and will continue to. If a gang came in and tried to claim this territory, or even tried to operate within it to sell drugs or whatever, our family, the Dark Knights, would take whatever action was necessary to defend it."
Finley looked nervously at Dixie. "Okay, now you're just scaring me. You make it seem like my quaint hometown could turn into a nightmare at any time."
Bullet and Dixie exchanged a knowing glance. They knew how real that possibility was. They also knew it would take a hell of a battle for any other group to overtake the Dark Knights. He took Finley's hand in his and said, "You don't have to worry about that. We've got this town. Nobody's going to mess with us."
"But..."
She looked pleadingly at Dixie.
"You said whatever action is necessary. Does that mean you'd fight? You just got done telling me that you were different from a gang."
"We are," Dixie insisted. "Nobody goes looking for trouble. But if it comes here, we'll take whatever measures we need to." Fear rose in Finley's eyes.
"Like fighting? Killing?
Do you think I'd ever let any harm come to my family?" Bullet asked.
"No.
To True's kids? To Gemma, Crystal? To you or Penny or anyone else in this town? Our town. The town my ancestors fought to make great for us."
Finley shook her head.
"It scares you, and I get that. I'd rather you didn't think about it, he said honestly. But it doesn't scare me. This is my reason for being here, to protect.
You say it like it's your calling, she said anxiously.
He shrugged. It is.
Just because you get out of the military doesn't make you any less of a soldier.
Dixie nodded in agreement. Now do you see why he doesn't want you going into biker bars?
Yes, she said.
But how can this whole underworld exist without some sort of, I don't know, without anyone knowing?
Bullet chuckled. People know. More people than you think. The principal at the high school, he's family.
Mr. Martin? He's not a whiskey, Finley said.
Our motorcycle club is family, Bullet explained.
That docile man is a member of your motorcycle club?
Bullet nodded. The owner of the flower shop, the CFO at Peaceful Harbor Bank, several doctors, the pharmacist at CVS. I could go on and on.
She lowered herself onto a stool. Wow, I had no idea. Her brow furrowed. So I could go check out other club bars, right? I'm not a member of your club, and clubs aren't like gangs, so that would work for research.
Dixie smiled.
No wonder you hired her, Bullet said to Dixie. She's as determined as you, only sweeter.
I'm sweet, Dixie smirked. I just hide it well. I think you're very sweet, Finley said. Tough too, but sweet and nice and funny.
Thanks. Dixie made a dramatic show of fluttering her lashes at Bullet. Christ, if you're dead set on going to a biker bar, I'll take you to the snake pit.
Bullet relented.
It's at the other end of town and owned by two members of the Dark Knights. It's classier than our joint, but it'll have to do.
Thank you, I think that'll help.
Dixie pushed to her feet. I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be right back, and then we can go over your other ideas. We kinda got sidetracked.
After Dixie was out of earshot, Bullet pushed his hands into the front pockets of his jeans and tried his best not to sound like an arrogant ass. I didn't mean to put you down, and I won't make that mistake again. You have my word, Lollipop. I'm a hard ass, but I'm not intentionally a dick.
She lowered her gaze, her face a mask of contemplation. He bent so his face was lower than hers and looked up at her, earning a sweet smile, which soothed the ache in his heart from accidentally hurting her.
Let me rephrase that to something more lollipop appropriate.
She smiled again, and this time it was warm and genuine, and gave him hope that she'd forgive his comment.
I'm tough and crass. Some might say I'm not easy to like, he said apologetically. We're from totally different worlds, and I'll never be a collared shirt yuppie, but I'd never in a million years try to hurt you.
I believe you, she said softly.
Think you can bear with me? Help me learn to keep my fucking mouth shut?
Bear with you? Yes. Help you keep your mouth shut? She shook her head, laughing softly. What time are you picking me up tonight?
He leaned forward, his lips grazing hers. She inhaled a ragged breath, and he whispered, 7:30.
No motorcycle.
No motorcycle, he agreed.
No Tinkerbell.
No Tink. Yet.
He pressed his lips to hers, vowing to never accidentally hurt her again, and hoping he could figure out how to lead with his fucking heart, because he knew better than anyone that being given a second chance was the gift of a lifetime.
Chapter 6
What do you wear on a date with a bullet train? Isabel's teasing voice rose from Finley's laptop, which was sitting on her bed. Finley stood at the threshold of her closet Friday evening, hands on hips, trying to figure out just that.
He needs a target, Isabel said, so I'm thinking crotchless panties are a must.
Is he?
Finley laughed, though she blushed a red streak.
What? It seems like the right thing for a bullet train.
No, just no. Please be serious.
I'm so nervous. Something sexy but not too sexy?
Finley suggested. After the kisses we shared, I don't want him to think I'll just give it up, you know? But I also don't want him to think I won't ever give it up.
I've got it.
Isabel waved her hands, her hazel eyes wide with amusement.
You need one of those light-up T-shirts that has two big yellow traffic lights, one on each boob. That will give him the message, don't stop, but don't speed through. Just take it nice and slow.
Finley rolled her eyes.
That's really helpful. Do you know how nervous I am? I think the fact that I had to hear about you changing your lingerie 4 times gave me a pretty good idea of how nervous you are. I'm glad you went with the white lace, though. That's totally you. And I think even badass Brutus would wonder what other sexy secrets you were keeping if he found edible underwear on the first date. He's not going to find white lace, either.
Penny's there, Isabel said matter-of-factly. She lifted her dark hair into an updo and sucked in her cheeks.
Do you think I should start eating healthier so I can look like those ridiculously skinny models who eat air for dinner?
What? No. And what did you say about Penny?
She's there. 3, 2, 1.
There was a knock at Finley's door.
You did not call her.
Okay, let's go with that. Answer your door, please.
I don't need Penny pressuring me tonight.
She stalked out of the bedroom and answered the door.
Hey, sis, nice outfit. Are you going for the June Cleaver look?
Penny walked right past her, carrying an armful of clothes, an enormous bag slung over her shoulder.
Where's his?
Bedroom. Finley followed her down the hall.
What's wrong with my bathrobe?
Nothing, if it's 1950, or you're 82 years old with a dusty cootie and hangnails.
I hate you right now, Finley said as she followed Penny into the bedroom.
What are you two, anyway? Plot bunnies, secretly scheming behind my back?
Hey, Iz.
Penny blew a kiss toward the laptop and tossed the clothes on the bed. She set her bag on the floor and said,
We are your saviors. Now take off that boner-killer bathrobe and let's see if we can find an outfit that might incite some boob-touching action.
Cock-knockin' action, Isabel said with a laugh.
Oh, yeah, even better. A little hide-the-handlebar, smoke-the-muffler.
Penny dug through the pile and held up a black T-shirt with Good Girls Sit, Bad Bitches Ride emblazoned across the front.
Huh? What do you think? If you go with that, I got you this to give to him.
She picked up an enormous men's shirt and showed them the back, which had 2 red and white targets and read, Press 'em here and hang on tight. Isabel fell onto her side, laughing.
What is wrong with you people?
Finley said, as she laughed and yanked the shirt from Penny's hand. She tossed it on the chair in the corner of the room and said,
No, no, and no. Do you have anything reasonable in here?
She picked up a little black dress that looked like it would fit a 7-year-old.
How can you wear this? You're 5 inches taller than me.
Penny, who looked like Zoe Deschanel with her blue eyes and walnut-brown hair, took after their father. She was tall and lean and about as carefree as a girl could be. She smoothed her hands over her jeans-clad hips and said,
It's all in the stretch of the material. This thing couldn't stretch to cover my cooch. How on earth does it cover yours?
Try it, Isabel suggested.
Yeah, put it on and see.
Isabel reached for the tie on Finley's robe.
Give me Grandma's robe. Let's sex you up.
As Finley stripped off her robe, Isabel whistled and cheered, and Penny lowered her voice and started singing,
Come on, girl, strip off the robe. That's it, girl. Show those globes.
Finley gave her a deadpan look.
I liked it, Isabel said. It made creative sense.
Nice lace, sis. Penny picked up the black dress and handed it to her.
Now let's cover up that innocent lingerie with some sluttiness.
Aren't I supposed to wear the sluttiness underneath the innocence? Penny set a hand on her hip and said,
Only if you never want to touch his drive shaft.
I feel like a stuffed sausage in this dress.
Stuffed sausages are good, Isabel said. And you look hot, like take me from behind hot.
Finley ripped the dress over her head and tossed it on the bed.
Nope, not going there.
Dark blue shift. Penny picked up a midnight blue dress that was almost as small as the black one.
No.
Leather miniskirt. She plucked it out from beneath the pile. I've got my lace-up fuck-me boots in the car.
Leather goes well with a motorcycle, Isabel said, and that one is cute.
No leather. Why can't you guys just help me be me, only better? Isabel made a kissing noise.
I love you, Finny, and you know I'm only giving you a hard time.
Penny flopped onto the bed on her side and began picking up each outfit.
It's our job to try to get you sexed up, no matter how hard you fight it.
Why?
Because one day you might want to get sexed up and be too embarrassed to ask, Penny said.
We know how nervous you are about going out with Bullet, Isabel added.
We just wanted to lighten the mood.
With leather and slut boots?
Finley flopped onto her back beside Penny.
Why don't I just wear one of my sundresses?
Penny's face appeared over hers.
Because your sister would never leave you hanging, and neither would Izzy. We shopped today and found something we think you'll love.
You shopped?
Finley turned toward the computer and Isabel held up her phone.
FaceTime shopping. We found you the best outfit. Penn took me to Chelsea's boutique. Oh, my God, Finn, when I move there, we are going to spend hours in that shop. Days. We may never leave.
Finley's hopes rose. Isabel and Penny had great taste when they weren't trying to be too wild.
She sat up and Penny reached into her red bag and withdrew a gift box, complete with a big pink ribbon.
Finley's throat thickened with emotion. Before their father had died, he'd celebrated each of their milestones with a gift wrapped up with a big pink bow. The milestones were never things they wanted to celebrate with their father, their first bras, first periods, first kisses. But now they were some of their most cherished moments.
Penny, take it.
Penny handed her the box and hugged her.
I wasn't there when you got all googly-eyed over Aaron, and I'm glad you let me be a part of this first date.
Tears welled in Finley's eyes. She glanced at the laptop and Isabel blew her a kiss. Her heart was so full she couldn't imagine how the night could get any better.
Thank you both so much. I know I'll love it as long as it's not made for a sex romp.
No promises there, Isabel said with a smile. She untied the ribbon and opened the top, gasping at the pretty rose-beige material.
You guys, this is gorgeous.
She lifted the dress out of the box and moved across the room to hold it up in front of the mirror, but she couldn't wait and turned her back to the girls. She removed her bra, then slipped the beautiful dress over her head. Soft cotton dusted the tops of her feet.
Let me.
Penny gathered Finley's hair over one shoulder and tied the halter. Finley turned around, overwhelmed by how well they knew her. She stood before the mirror, unable to believe how pretty she looked. How perfect the dress fit. The halter-style top was trimmed with lace, and a crocheted pattern covered her midriff. The long skirt had a thick crocheted stripe above her knees, giving it just the right amount of sexiness without looking like she was trying too hard.
Finny, Isabel said, you look gorgeous. Bullet and every other man out there is going to fall at your feet.
Finley looked at Penny and said,
I thought you were really trying to get me to wear something I never would.
Nope. I love my big sister just the way she is. But when you're ready for Tramp City, we're your girls.
Penny hugged her. I'm glad you're back home again. You look lovely and very fuckable.
Bullet will appreciate both, Isabel chimed in. Let's accessorize. For the next 20 minutes, Finley modeled sandals, earrings, bangles, and necklaces, her nervousness increasing with each rendition. She finally settled on a pair of cute beige sandals, rose-gold dangling earrings, and a simple Alex and Annie red kindred cord heart bracelet. With the outfit accessorized, Penny left to meet friends for dinner, and Finley ended the video call with Isabel and was left alone to pick apart her thoughts. She had gone on a few dates over the past couple of years, but they were typical guys and typical dates. She had been nervous before them, as anyone would be on a first date, but those guys hadn't picked her up when she'd been drinking and driven her home. They hadn't seen her uncorked, singing silly songs like a ridiculous teenager and screaming at the sight of a dog. They hadn't carried her through the very living room in which she now sat, nervously fidgeting with the soft fabric of her dress. She definitely hadn't wanted to see them naked or touch their bare chests, and not one of them made her knees weak with a single kiss. Jeez, Bullet had really gotten a show from her the other night. Why on earth did he still want to go out with her after all that? She rose to her feet and paced. It was 7:30 on the dot, and with every tick of the clock her heartbeat quickened. She didn't even know where he was taking her. What if she was overdressed? Did Bullet ever wear anything other than jeans and T-shirts? Maybe she should wear jeans. She went into the bedroom, but the thought of wearing jeans made her even more nervous. Penny was the jeans girl in their family. Like their mother, Finley had always preferred more feminine outfits. Some girls felt sexier when they showed everything in tight jeans, but Finley felt prettiest in dresses, and this dress made her feel extra sexy because of the crocheted midriff. Nope, jeans would not make her any less nervous. She headed back toward the living room, trying to imagine what Bullet had planned for their date. But every time his face appeared in her mind, it was accompanied by pieces of their conversation. "Don't fight it, Lollipop. Tonight's our night." She stopped cold in the middle of the living room. What was he expecting to happen tonight? Had she given him the impression they would sleep together? What if their kisses, which had felt magical and special to her, were just kisses to him? He must have a lot of experience with women. Maybe he kisses them all like that. The thought made her feel a little queasy. She walked out onto the deck and crossed her arms against the cool September air, gazing out at the wooded expanse buffering her backyard from outsiders. She didn't want to be just another kiss for anyone, but did she want to be intimate with Bullet? A quick and electric pulse radiated through her. Placing her hands on the railing, she inhaled the salty harbor air and closed her eyes, enjoying the fluttering of her heart at the thought of going out with Bullet. She'd forgotten how exciting it was to want to go out with someone. Then again, her nerves were probably equally as heightened by not knowing what going out with Bullet really meant. She was surprised to see that it was nearing 8 o'clock when she finally went inside, and she wondered if she was being stood up. She checked her phone, but she didn't have any messages. Assuming Bullet got held up at the bar, she tried to cut him a little slack. Not everyone was as punctual as she was. She sat on the couch, paced the floor, then sat down again, all the while watching the clock. Her insides hurt a little more with each quarter hour that passed. "I definitely enjoy pushing your buttons, and I'm pretty much an asshole." Her thoughts went from forgiving to irritation. As it neared 8:30, a warning voice sounded in her head. Her face grew hot with humiliation. If he thought this was acceptable, he was dead wrong, and if he'd done it to piss her off, then he'd succeeded. She went outside again, needing cool air to calm herself down. She didn't want to believe he would stand her up, not after the glorious connection they'd had when they'd kissed, and the sweet things he'd said to her when Dixie had left the room. "I'd never in a million years try to hurt you." She went back inside and turned on the television to distract herself, only to turn it off a few minutes later and stare at her phone, debating calling him. If he had purposefully stood her up, it would be embarrassing to chase after him. Plus, she'd likely give him a harsh piece of her mind, and she would not want to finish the job at the bar, which wouldn't be fair to Dixie and the rest of their family. But was this fair to her, to get all dressed up and then be forgotten? The idea that he would purposefully do that to her didn't sit right. It didn't fit what she knew of him. It didn't fit what her heart felt, and her heart had never led her astray before. If something happened to him, wouldn't he have called if he could? A cold knot formed in the pit of her stomach. He and Dixie seemed to think their outlook on protecting the town was normal, but to Finley it was unfathomable. Her father had been a tough man. He'd worked long, hard hours, and he'd never put up with disrespect from others, but she couldn't imagine him actually fighting with anyone. Could the things Bullet and Dixie had told her about turf wars really happen anywhere other than in novels? Were there territories and turfs all over the world, secretly protected by groups like the Dark Knights? Did she want to be involved with Bullet if it were true? If there had been an incident, wouldn't it be on the news? What if this was typical for him because of the club? Could she deal with this much worry on an ongoing basis? She flipped on the local television station, crossed her arms, her legs bouncing nervously. 15 minutes later, after hearing about the upcoming fall festival and other community news, she turned it off. This was ridiculous. Clutching her phone, she forced herself to call Bullet. It rang endlessly, and when his voicemail kicked in, his deep, raspy voice brought rise to goosebumps, despite that he may very well have stood her up. She'd leave a quick message, hoping she didn't sound as confused, irritated, and hurt as she felt. "Hi, Bullet, it's Finley." Now she felt stupid. What was she supposed to say? "Remember, we had a date? I hope you're okay. Call me?" If he'd stood her up, she didn't want him to call. And if he hadn't... Her heart hurt with the idea that something could have happened to him. She found her voice, and the truth came out. "I was worried that something happened, or maybe you changed your mind." That was all she could manage, because if he'd changed his mind and not called, then he was a big jerk. She debated calling her sister, or Isabel, but they'd been so happy for her she'd only feel worse talking to them. Maybe she should call Dixie. How embarrassing would that be? Ugh, she'd never been in this situation before. What did women do when faced with this? It felt wrong and it made her angry. No man should have the power to make her wonder if he thought she wasn't worth a phone call. She set her phone on the coffee table, kicked off her sandals, and curled up on the couch. But curling up on the couch had never been her way of dealing with a hard situation. 60 seconds later, she was in the kitchen, loading her counter up with ingredients and flipping through her favorite recipes. She put on an apron, like a boxer donned his gloves, her mind instantly turning to familiar, safe territory, which came in measurements and degrees, not black leather biker boots. Street lamps shimmered over dark hollows on the lifeless residential street, where Bullet sat alone in his truck. Meanwhile, on the main drag, traffic lights blinked on endless timers, and empty cars lined the streets like soldiers awaiting their next missions, while their owners slept safely tucked away from the elements, blissfully unaware of the tragedies and crimes around every corner. Trees swayed in the breeze along the quiet road, reminding Bullet that fall was bearing down on the last of the lingering summer heat. He'd walked these roads as a teenager, driven them in the middle of the night in search of answers. Answers that had come years later, when the military had sent him overseas, the perfect place to unleash his demons. He'd come home a different man, and now traveled these same city streets with the sole purpose of eradicating trouble. But tonight, for the first time in his life, he hadn't been searching for a damn thing. He wasn't looking for answers or meaning or fucking trouble. He gripped the steering wheel with blood-stained fingers, swallowing the metallic taste that lingered like an unwanted ghost. His chest constricted, and his breathing quickened as memories came at him like a hurricane, fast and unrelenting. His eyes slammed against the sounds of the babies crying, the mother screaming, and her brother gurgling, struggling to get to his family. Drawing upon the grounding techniques he'd learned to manage the rare and horrific occurrences when events triggered flashbacks to the war, and they crept up on him like demons out of the darkness, he fumbled for the radio, turning it up loud enough to give him something to focus on before they could take hold. He let the music pound through him, obliterating the rage, the fear, and the goddamn taste and smell of death. Minutes passed like hours, elongated and painful in the wake of the trigger. But the music and his mental fortitude did the trick, keeping the flashback at bay. This time. If only he'd been in the right frame of mind to have halted it earlier. He turned the radio down and grabbed his phone from the seat beside him. The message light blinked like a beacon, as it had been doing since he'd gone back to the scene of the accident to retrieve it. He didn't have to look to know sweet Finley had tried to track him down. He didn't need to hear her voice to know she was probably furious and hurt. He owed her an explanation and an apology, but giving it would mean risking another flashback. Finley didn't need a man with demons he couldn't slay. He set the phone on the seat beside the flowers he'd brought for her and started the truck, taking one last look at Finley's house. His heart thundered wildly, memories of the hurt in her eyes from earlier clawing at him like an animal burrowing into his soul. He punched the dashboard, furious at his vulnerability. How many times had he driven away from a woman and never looked back? Once and done. That was the motto he lived by when it came to women. Hell, it'd be easier to count the number of times he'd given a shit about them. Once. The goddamn angel in that little house was the only one that mattered, and he'd fucking screwed her over again. He knew he should walk away, knew she didn't need the weight of his past hanging around them like a noose waiting to tighten. But he couldn't leave without giving her an explanation. He couldn't take the hurt he'd caused and drive it deeper. At least that's what he told himself as he cut the engine, grabbed the flowers, and climbed from the car at too long after midnight. He strode through the darkness, telling himself to take every bit of shit she handed him, because he fucking deserved it. Chapter 7 Beyond losing his family, there wasn't much Bullet was afraid of. But as he stood on Finlay's front porch, fear gathered in his gut, which was fucking ridiculous. He'd suffered through wars, looked down the barrel of more guns than he cared to remember, seen more death than any man should. Yet the idea of seeing the hurt he'd caused in Finlay's beautiful eyes again had him tied in knots. What was worse was that he had no idea if telling her the truth would cause another flashback. He eyed the steps. He could just fucking leave, lock himself away behind the steel walls he'd erected practically since the day he was born, brush her off tomorrow so coldly she'd never look at him again. His hands fisted, nearly crushing the bouquet. He wasn't a goddamn coward. He knocked much harder than he meant to and leaned his hand against the doorframe, staring at his boots, which were speckled with blood. "Bullet?" he heard through the door, then the rattle of the chain, the click of the deadbolt. Finlay opened the door, blinking sleepily. His gaze swept down her pretty dress, and his heart stumbled. The color drained from her face, and she pulled the door open wider, bracing it against her hip. "Oh my gosh, you're bleeding! Are you okay? What happened?"
"Nothing," he mumbled. "I just came by to apologize."
"Nothing? Bullet, your shirt is torn. Your arm is cut, and it looks like you have blood all over your clothes. Were you in an accident?"
"No. Please, let's not do this. I'm sorry, I..." Her eyes went cold.
"Let's not do this? You stand me up after hounding me to go out with you, then you show up looking like you've been in a fight, and you don't want to explain? I don't know what other girls consider okay, but this is not all right with me."
"God damn it."
He gritted his teeth. He'd gone through enough shit tonight. He didn't have the energy for any more. "Is this part of your club or whatever? Because if it is, I don't want any part of it. I can't sit around worrying about if you've been hurt or killed, or if you just decided to blow me off."
"Forget it. I'm sorry I fucked up your night."
He handed her the flowers and headed down the steps. "That's it?" she called after him. "You're leaving, without any explanation or anything." He turned, his gut twisting and tightening like it was being wrung out, and he stalked back up the steps, chest tight, every muscle constricted.
"You just told me that you want nothing to do with me. Fuck me for saving a family's life. I'm sorry I messed up your evening. I'm sorry I didn't call you, but I was tending to more urgent matters."
Her mouth opened, then closed. You saved... Oh my gosh, Bullet, I'm sorry. I had no idea."
"Would it have mattered? Because it could just as easily have been club business that called me away. I'm not Prince Charming. Hell, Lollipop, I'm not even the fucking Toad. But I always do the right thing. And it just so happened that the right thing meant staying at the hospital with the woman whose babies and brother are in fucking critical condition until her goddamn sister could be there with her. Should I have called? Yes. Could I have? No. I dropped my phone after calling 911 so I could get the family out of the fucking car before it went up in flames. But the truth is, I wouldn't have left that woman to make the call. Not for anything. Her babies and her brother's lives were hanging on by a thread. You don't leave someone alone in that situation. Even if it means losing something you want. This..." He pointed to the space between them, shaking his head. "This either will or won't happen. But either way, we'll see each other around town. That woman, Sarah Beckley, may never see one of her children breathe again." Fear and regret filled her damp eyes.
"I'm sorry, that poor family. That's awful."
"Yeah, it was," and so was leaving you hanging. But you're right, you don't need a guy like me messing up your life.
He headed for the steps again.
Wait!
She ran after him, snagging the back of his shirt as he descended the steps.
Please don't go, I'm sorry. I was hurt and worried about you, and...
His forward momentum sent her tipping forward. With his heart in his throat, he circled her waist with his arms so she wouldn't fall from her precarious position. In her bare feet, she was even more petite, reminding him of just how delicate and fragile she was, despite her confidence and demands for respect. She was a mighty force of good, pure and kind in ways that made him want to be closer to her, to find a way to be a better man for her. But he wasn't a dreamer, and when he gazed into her eyes, he knew what he had to do.
Finley, you just told me you didn't want any part of my lifestyle, and I don't blame you. Look at you, all dressed up like a princess, more beautiful than any woman I've ever seen. And this is what I am.
He waved at his bloody, torn T-shirt and jeans.
You're warm sunshine, and I'm a winter storm. That's not going to change. Trouble happens, and I go. Even if I could change it, I wouldn't, sweetheart. I can't watch others suffer or know someone's in trouble and not do something.
She looked down at her feet, and this time he didn't lift her chin, didn't try to change her mind, because this was his reality, and probably the end of the line for them. Finley had always considered herself a selfless, giving person, but bullet whiskey brought new meaning to the word selfless, and to the saying double-edged sword. There was so much goodness about him, as everyone had told her, but to be with a man like Bullet meant being okay with coming not second, or even third or fourth in his life. It meant taking a back seat not just to a career like most men, but to an entire town full of people. And it clearly didn't end there. She thought she'd never met anyone like him because he was so gruff, but she'd witnessed enough of his softer side to know it existed. And now she was starting to understand where all that hardness came from. Carrying the weight of his family, their business, and the safety of the town on his shoulders had to take its toll. Did anyone have Bullet's back the way he had everyone else's?
Bullet, as I've said, I don't know much about guys like you. And honestly, I'm not sure there are other guys like you. But you make me question who I am, which is something I thought I've known forever.
A deep V formed between his brows.
Trust me, Finns, there's nothing wrong with you. I'm pretty fucked up. But don't worry, I won't get in your way at the bar. I'll take a step back while you finish your work. Go on, Lollipop, get inside so I know you're safe.
With a pang, she realized he'd misunderstood her intent. She stepped closer, her hand hovering around his waist. But there were so many bloodstains, and the magnitude of what he'd faced hit her with greater force, bringing rise to tears. For him, and for the family he'd helped.
Finley, he said in that gravelly voice that made her stomach dip.
She blinked away the tears and lowered her hand to his. His fingers curled around it, holding tight.
I don't want you to take a step back, she said tentatively,
unsure if he was purposefully trying to push her away because he wanted to, or doing so to protect her. She had a feeling it was the latter.
I don't know what will happen between us, but you say I'm sunshine and you're a winter storm. For me, knowing winter is on the horizon makes the oppressive days of long hot summers more bearable. And on the coldest of winter nights, I have summer to look forward to. They kind of complement each other.
I can't change, Lollipop, and I have a feeling you're used to guys who can.
But that's just it. I don't want to change you, but I do want to understand you. To know what you've gone through, and what has led you to become the man you are.
He squeezed her hand, but his gaze shifted over her shoulder. His features were tight, as if he was struggling to keep a raw emotion in check. Taking a cue from his way of doing things, she stepped into his line of sight and personal space. When their eyes connected, a different type of electricity sizzled between them. It was stronger, louder, and somehow also softer and more pliable than before.
If that makes you uncomfortable, then I don't know. Maybe we can meet halfway,
I'm an over-communicator, I know that. His mustache lifted with an almost smile. There was no denying that they were on the opposite end of the communication spectrum, but her curiosity had grown to something much stronger, and she wanted to try to get to know him better, though she wasn't sure he'd ever really open up to her. But she'd been trying to ignore something that had been nagging at her, and she didn't want to wonder about it anymore. Swallowing hard, because she was a little afraid the answer might only be sexual, she asked, "Why do you like me, Bullet? I see you with someone much tougher." He was quiet for so long she didn't think he'd answer. When he finally spoke, his tone was warm and certain. "I'm not gonna lie to you. At first it was purely physical. Your sweet little body and that smile knocked my boots right off, and your eyes, Jesus, Finns, your eyes fucking kill me. And then you were all ballsy and pushy, which totally turned me on." Heat spread across her cheeks, and she lowered her gaze. He lifted her chin with his finger and said, "But then I saw you around town, and I swear you light up the streets. You lit me up inside, and it's been a damn long time since I've felt anything but darkness." He shrugged. "How could I ignore the glow of an angel?" "But," she whispered, completely taken with his honesty, "how can you be so hard one minute and so romantic the next?" "I don't know a damn thing about romance. I just say what I feel. I can't explain it, and I'm no wordsmith, but when you stood up to me in the bar and you didn't care how big I was or what I could do for you, like most people, you demanded my respect. I'm sure this isn't what you want to hear, but I'm not used to women giving a shit about why I do things or what I really want, and honestly, I don't usually have to talk at all. One look is enough to..." He shrugged, his gaze sliding up to the sky. When he looked at her again, he said, "I've unknowingly hurt you twice, Finley. That's not the man you deserve or the man I want to be." "Well, not that it's okay to hurt me, but you did tell me this afternoon that I'd misinterpreted what you'd said, that you weren't calling me stupid, and tonight it sounds like you were a hero, so how can I not forgive you?" "I'm nobody's hero, I told you that." He was frustratingly modest, and that was another thing she wanted to understand, but for now she set that aside. She needed him to understand where she was coming from. "I don't know if I'll be okay with coming second or 17th or last in a long line of people who need you. That's a hard concept to grasp, a little like accidentally putting salt in whipping cream instead of sugar. It could be a deal-breaker, but that would be on me, not you. And I won't know unless we try. But on the other hand, you might not want to be with a woman who's afraid of dogs and motorcycles." Disquieting thoughts whispered in her mind. "We don't make much sense." His arms came around her, and he lowered his lips to hers, kissing her so tenderly it felt like a dream. "Nothing in my life makes sense, Finley, but you fucking wreck me. I don't know if I can give you the answers you need, but that's on me," he said, throwing her words back at her with a coy smile that warmed her all over. "And I'd rather try with you than walk away." They stared at each other for a long moment, quieting her troubled spirits enough for her to realize they were still standing in her front yard, and that in the space of an evening, everything had changed. She took his hand and led him up the porch steps. "Let's get you cleaned up, and maybe we can salvage our first date." He stepped over the threshold, and she felt his hesitation, saw a mask of discomfort come over him like a veil. Her table and counters were covered with cookies, cupcakes, and tarts. "I cook when I'm having a hard time," she explained as she carried the flowers he'd brought her toward the kitchen. She filled a vase with water, and as she put the flowers in it, she realized he hadn't moved from the doorway. He was gripping the doorknob like a lifeline. "What's wrong?" He cleared his throat, his eyes darting around the room. "I can't be in here, Finley. I'm sorry, but I can't breathe. I need space." Her heart pitched, but could she blame him after everything he'd been through? "Okay, then." He strode past her, opened the doors to the deck, and stepped outside. He gripped the railing as she had earlier. and his head fell between his shoulders. His silhouette looked even more imposing against the bluish hue of the moonlight, and at the same time she sensed something subdued within him, like an injured wild animal. "Are you all right?" she asked as she came outside. "Listen, Bullet,"